because they were pretty stubborn and, you know, pretty hard to get along with some of the time. So when you have animals show up in your dreams, kind of look at what the temperament or traits are of that particular being, and you might learn something about yourself. If you're being chased in a dream and it's an animal, the animal probably has traits that represent the things you're afraid of in your own life or haven't dealt with or don't want to look at. You know, you're resisting that kind of thing. If you're hunting an animal in a dream, that animal probably has traits or qualities that you need, that you're looking for, that you're gathering, and that it can let you know that you're doing a good job on that. You know, it's coming to you. Now, this is from some native teachings that I read once, just about animals and dreams generally. Four-footed, and I thought, to me this seemed a little backwards, but this is what they said. Four-footed represent the emotions, desire, feelings, and senses. Two-leggeds represent the mental, thought, what you're thinking or your telepathic ability. Fish and sea creatures represent the etheric and astral action or soul action in your life. I always think of fish and sea creatures as emotion, you know, maybe meaning to do with the emotions. Insects, I found this interesting, has to do with bacterial action. I have no idea what that means other than that. Reptiles represent the sexual will's action or the kundalini action. And I'm sure many of you have had snake dreams. And in my life, I had one fabulous, I've had many snake dreams, but the one that stays with me is of a great snake. I mean, it had a body width of this size and a head that was just massive. And the snake, I was sitting like in a rocking chair like this reading, and this great snake came in my front door and just slowly came to me until the head was just standing, you know, right in front of me, gazing into my eyes. And again, I had to deal with, am I afraid or do I want this in my life? And I decided that I wanted the snake in my life, and it just kind of came up on my lap and, you know, curled up, and it was a wonderful dream. The colors on the snake were not like earth colors. They were incredibly jewel and iridescent. And of course, I had a fabulous kundalini rising not long after, and lots of insight poured in, and just all kinds of things happened. So you can play with your dreams and the animals that come forward that way. Let's see. I want to talk a little bit about animal development. And when you've got a pet or an animal friend that's really at the height of its evolution, one of the ways you can know that is if this is an animal that brings rest, peace, or healing, relaxation to you personally or to your family. And one of the reasons I talk about Scamper as being sort of a healing animal is I've had many experiences with her when I'm having like a violent headache, a hormonal thing, or one time it seemed like all my centers were just whacked out. She laid between my legs at the root and then slowly moved up each of the major chakras until she sat on my head. She even put her paws on my third eye. It was quite remarkable. And I've heard of other animals doing this, and I just accepted everything she was giving me. Of course, I felt wonderful when it was through. Animals are very sensitive to emotions, so if you are having a fight or if you are sobbing uncontrollably or really having a hard time, be sensitive to how much the pet can take of that and maybe let them have a break outside for a while, because they do run a lot of that through their bodies to help you become balanced again. That's one of the gifts they give. Oh, all right. I'm sure of it, yes.
So she says if you're trying to build energy, you have to run interference with your pet because they naturally want to come onto your body,
yes,
and ground it and push it back down.
And that happens when I do healing work. If she's in the house and the door is shut to the healing room, she will come and say, "Let me in." Or if she's outside, she'll be at the window going, "Let me in." Or sometimes she will literally, if the person is okay with it, come in. And she will get on the person. If it's appropriate, I'll let her stay. If it isn't, like what you're saying, if we're trying to build energy and she's trying to ground them, then she has to go out. So, yeah, good point, Cookie. Very good point. There are so many stories of animals rescuing their people. of knowing. There's a wonderful book, I think I forgot to put this on that list, it's very old, called That Quail Robert. I know I loaned that to you, and I can't find it right now, so it's out with somebody.
No, actually,
but
we never found it.
Oh.
I've read it before.
Well, I just love it. And that quail was such a bright, intelligent little thing. It was a little one that hatched out and got left behind, and they adopted this quail, and she just became part of their family. She knew when they were coming. She knew when they were leaving, or he, I guess it was a he, actually, Robert. She had her special little sleeping place. She'd let him know when she was tired and would be nodding off, you know, and he'd have to put her to bed, and it's a remarkable story. It's just wonderful. Another great little book to read. This story I want to share with you, too. This, again, is from Flower Newhouse. She tells of a group in England who had a healing circle that met each week, and they decided that the circle would be open to plants and animals as well as people. So one time a man brought a very sickly cat that had kind of adopted him, but it was like right on death's doorstep. And, you know, they prayed over the cat and they laid hands on the cat, and it had a remarkable recovery after only one session. It was just bright and chipper. Well, he brought it back a couple of more times, and then finally the cat was in such good shape he didn't bring it anymore. But to everyone's surprise, the cat showed up at the same time it had been worked on previously at the next meeting. But the man hadn't come. He didn't bring it. The cat came on its own. Not only this, it came from its little town or village in England, went through the city streets of London, through all the traffic, and found the healing circle and asked to be let in. So, no! That's just one of many remarkable stories. There are just books of wonderful stories like this about animals that you can just eat up. They're lovely. One of the things that she says, and I think this is so true, is that love awakens love. And if you can awaken to your animal, or if the animal can reach you, it is love which connects us to one another, and that's true in the plant and animal kingdom as well as in the human kingdom. Now, another little thing I want to share with you is animal blessings. I grew up in the Catholic Church, and that's something that we did at least once a year. We took our animals to church and had them blessed, or you'd have a gathering out in the country where I lived, and a priest would come with his holy water, and he would bless each of the animals. And I can't tell you how powerful this is, not just for the person, but for the animal. Usually, sometimes they will just flick the holy water. But the priest that we had was old Irish, and what he did was he would come and lay his hand either on the crown chakra or on the third eye. I don't know that the priest knew that's what he was doing specifically. But then he would say the blessing individually. And what happens when you do that for the animal is you're sending a thought form, a living energy that goes into the mind of that animal and remains there to keep them and bless them. There are some animal healers that say if you look at the animal at the crown or in the third eye area, if they've received that blessing, you can see a little white, brilliant cross, or some people call it a flame, or I've also heard it described as a bluish kind of a fire that is there. And there are churches locally that do that, and you might have to take the animal back the next year. If they've developed a bad habit, like I have a friend that just called, she has a lovely shepherd that's suddenly gotten very aggressive. And I tactfully suggested that maybe he really doesn't like the new dog run that his male owner so lovingly built for him, that he no longer can be the property protector when he's in that dog run, you know. So they need to talk to him and get his purpose kind of renegotiated and cleared up again. So anyway. But I just wanted to mention about animal blessings. And if any of you know about St. Francis or St. Anthony, these are two very revered beings, human beings, who had a deep and abiding connection with animals. There are wondrous stories about St. Anthony, who in the beginning was terrified to speak in front of people, but eventually became quite an orator. And he would go to a public square to speak, and the animals would come, knowing that he was going to be there. And there are lots of legends about the horses and the donkeys getting on their knees to St. Anthony. They loved him so much. And similar stories of St. Francis. They're just, you have to read about those two men sometime if you haven't. And then I want to share with you, this prayer was developed by the American Humane Association, but it's really from the prayer by Albert Schweitzer, who was probably one of the greatest animal people that ever lived. He was deeply connected to all forms of life, but animals in particular. And the prayer is this: Hear our humble prayer, O God, for our friends the animals, especially for animals who are suffering, for animals that are overworked, underfed, and cruelly treated, for all wistful creatures in captivity who beat against the bars, for any that are hunted or lost or deserted or frightened or hungry, for all that must be put to death. We entreat for them all thy mercy and pity, and for those who deal with them we ask a heart of compassion and gentle hands and kindly words. Make us ourselves to be true friends to animals and so to share the blessings of the merciful. I don't know if the Humane Society gives credit to Schweitzer, but I know for a fact, because I've read his prayer many times, and some of the words are directly taken from his prayer about the animals. Okay, I want to pass out to you a little sheet that has kind of, in a nutshell, communicating with animals. Just a few little steps. I think a lot of you intuitively already know this. Also, there are some websites. If you're on the net, on the web, you can get up there and find things out on the web about animals. There's a bunch of them, I guess. I've only come across a few, but I've heard there are lots. So. Have you bumped into some, Lori? Yeah, there's quite a few. Now, this is adapted from Penelope Smith's technique of communicating with animals. There's another lady, Tellington, I can't think of her first name. Linda Tellington Jones. She is wonderful, and I don't think I put her books on my list, but come across any of hers. Tellington Touch for Animals, wonderful. So the first one is just to sit quietly and observe your friend. Oh, my spelling's a little off here. Letting you mind get calm and clear. Allow yourself to become open and perceive and receive clearly. It's really important that you still your mind, because the animal can see all of your thought forms. So if you've got all this mental chatter and things are flicking off and on up here, communication can be difficult. So if you can go into kind of an awake meditative state, that's perfect, or just get still. And then to practice, she suggests, and I don't know that I ever actually did this, but she suggests that you visualize something like a ball of light and then send the ball of light, you know, to different places in the room and actually get the sense of seeing it move there. And then practice sending an image to your animal friend. So you might send an image of, I don't know, something good that they like to eat, or of being groomed, you know, their brush or whatever it is, or their leash if they like to be walked, or a favorite sleeping pad, something that the animal will know. Just send the image to them. And then next, get their attention and send a hello or another message or image. And just do it, you know, don't expect anything, just do it. And then do it again and imagine that the animal friend is saying hello back. Now, I made the note here because this is, I think, a really important point. It's not important that they have eye contact with you. They can be gazing off into space. You know, or they can be having kind of their eyes closed, but you still might get a response. So it's not absolutely necessary that they're gazing deeply into your eyes. So send them a hello and imagine them saying it back and see what you get. Now, some people get smells with their animals' responses. This has happened to me a lot with dogs in particular. I think because that faculty is so highly developed in dogs. Monty, I didn't know what was going on for a while, but when he would want to talk, I would usually get some kind of a grassy fragrance or, you know, a wood. He liked to carry logs of wood around for some weird reason sometimes. And, you know, sometimes I'd get this woodsy smell, and he might be just sitting out there staring in the window trying to get my attention, but I didn't know he was there. And I would smell the wood, and then I'd go and sit out with him. So next, ask a question, and then just let the communication flow. Receive whatever comes forward. Oh, blanket love. Scamper came to us when she was barely 4 weeks old. She was like this big, and I had to drop her feeder, so she didn't get mom nearly enough as she wanted. So, yes. Especially when she likes to do this in the wintertime, too, when it gets cold. Yeah. So when you sit and try to receive, don't censor anything that comes. Let me tell you, when I gave birth the first time, I was so blown open as mother. I had such a deep connection that I connected with all life. I mean, I was Earth Mother. And I have memories of being out in my yard gardening, and a bee might show up, or a black wasp, or a butterfly. They all talked to me. I heard them all. Sometimes I would hear things like, I'm going to make a nest here. I don't want you to dig here. The black wasps in particular were very industrious. And I could be like just this far away. They never bothered me in the least. So, and I at first thought, oh, this is real interesting. I've never talked to a wasp before, or bumblebees. You know, I had one land on my back. I was carrying such a field of compassion and openness and gentleness at the time. Nothing was afraid of me, you know. When my husband and I have gone places, I've told you the story about going to Yosemite, and I've had wild birds come and sit on my shoes or sit on Bert's boots if he stayed still. One day we had a river picnic, and this beautiful male, something like a house finch, but not really, it was some other finch or linnet or something, came and sang and sang and sang, and Bert was just stunned. And I invited the bird to eat with us. You know, we shared some things. He ate out of our hands. He crawled up on the leg. It was amazing. After a while, he flew across the river, and we went, oh, he's gone. That was wonderful. But no, he came back with his lady friend and all their little babies. Now, the babies, being taught by wonderful finch parents, went in the tree. Mom and Dad came down and sat on the feet and tried to coax the babies down. The babies never sat on us, but they got very close. Pretty soon we had squirrels, we had deer. It was remarkable. We had a whole family of ducks show up from nowhere. I had just been thinking of duck people, thinking, you know what we need with all the water in front of us? We just need a duck family. It'd be so delightful. Here they came! So when you have that kind of open-heartedness, they hear you and they come. It's just delightful. Then number 6 is very important. Acknowledge the answer. Monty, when he would sit, he would just start to quiver when he would talk to me sometimes, wanting to know if I got it. And if I stroked his great head or verbally said something to him, then he would kind of reposition himself and do the next, whatever was coming next. He wanted to know about life after death. This dog was just amazing. In Boone's book, the dog, he speaks about Strong Heart, an incredible story about this dog teaching this man to meditate and what being still really was all about. So communication is absolutely possible. And then finally, just practice. Just practice. Linda's got two wonderful and remarkable cats, North and South, that I know you're really connected with and probably bring you all kinds of good information all the time. Yes. Share a little bit of that, Linda, if you'd like to. Roger was just an amazing dog, another golden. A big amber dog. Oh. Yeah, nobody there with them. Oh.
Anyway, they never could find out exactly, but I tried everything I could find.
You did everything. You did.
I didn't work, and I was just involved with the
stalker. How old was Roger?
He was only 7, and that's why it just didn't seem right.
Yeah. It was such a tragic time. It was a hard time. He didn't.
For a long time. I mean, the vet could not believe when they finally called and said he died. He didn't live this long because he hadn't eaten for like 2 minutes. But we had a regular conversation. We really did.
Oh, I just loved him. When I went to your house, and he would, I didn't get there very often, but he always knew me, and it was just, yummy. Okay. Full of joy and very, very hard. Yes. Yeah. Oh, you did. Yeah, absolutely. It's hard. I've heard a wonderful story about two dog companions. The one was I think she was a golden, and she was leaving, and her little friend just stayed, the other dog friend, you know, stayed by this dog night and day, and the owner came in one day to find them nose to nose facing each other on a rug, and their eyes just gazing deeply into each other's eyes, and she spoke very movingly of how this touched her, that she knew the little dog was encouraging the other dog, that it was all right to leave, it was safe, I'm not leaving you, I love you. You know, that's another point, that there's so much you could say on the subject, but the companionship of animal to animal and the devotion that's there, there's wonderful horse stories about their stable mates. I'm sure you must know a bunch of those. And how devoted they are, and how hurtful it is to remove one from the other. You know, how lonely they get and upset. They definitely have a companionship within their own kingdoms. And usually it's important, if you have one, to have a companion for it. And this cat is one of the few that I've known that seems to be fine with just herself. But I think it's because she's done this many, many times. And she's at a point where she's probably going to go on to whatever her next step is, the next lifetime. For animals, when they're at the top of their evolution, they go into a humanoid type. They will evolve up the next, not this human species. It would be what we think of as a lower human species, like what was on this planet, Cro-Magnon or Neanderthal. And if you look at those beings, they were rather animalistic. They still didn't have the voice box developed. They still sometimes were on all fours and that sort of thing. And for the large animals like the dinosaurs and all of the ones that are extinct, the dinosaurs, they say, are, this is what I have read, this isn't from my intuition, but what I've read, are in a kind of a holding phase in some of the Earth's lower astral planes, until it's right for them to finish the work that was stopped so suddenly when whatever happened to remove them from the planet. And there was something else I was going to say about that that just totally left my brain. I guess it wasn't important. But anyway, Also, I want to say the old creatures in myth and legend, the satyrs, the nymphs, the fauns, sphinxes, all of those have their place in reality. That's why they've come down to us in myth. It's just so far removed from us that we don't know anymore what that is. But there is a place for them, and they are real in their place, whether it's in another planetary system, another universe, whatever that is. And some of them have visited here. Some of them, I think, still come in on occasion. There are some wonderful stories about people who have their vision open, being especially in some of the big botanical gardens, who have seen fauns, who have seen Pan, things like that. So you just have to keep an open mind and heart and experience these things. One last animal story that I want to share with you, because it just stunned and moved me beautifully. A friend of mine and I had gone up to Yosemite for the day, and we stopped at Wawona on the way back. And we pulled off the road, and there were some nice little trees off the road across from the hotel there. And we had lunch, and we were just sitting there talking, and lunch made us nice and snoozy, so we thought, well, it's so sunny, let's lie down and take a nap. So we did. This is my friend Ginny. And I woke up hearing some snuffling noises, and I just kind of opened my eyes and looked up, and we were surrounded by the fallow deer that are there. And the big bucks with their nice little racks, you know, and the does were kissing me and snuffling on Ginny's hair. She was still asleep. And it was so wonderful to have these animals that close checking us out and not afraid. And I whispered to Ginny, you know, to move really slowly, because the buck had a good rack on him, and we could have been hurt, you know, if he moved suddenly. But I just didn't get that at all. It was utter magic, just magic. And I slowly reached over and asked, you know, if I could take a picture, and they just kind of looked at me, so I started taking pictures, and we've got some great pictures of those deer, you know, while we were there. And anyway, that's the kind of experiences you're going to have if you work with this at all, with wildlings, as Flower Newhouse always calls them. In my yard, I have jays that come to the door and go, where's the food? You know, where is it? And when I forget to fill the hummingbird feeder, he dive bombs me. He never does it unless the feeder's empty. But I get zoop, you know. It's like, oh, okay, I better check the feeder. So they really come to know that you are safe and trustworthy, and you help them. So putting out water in an old flower pot or a bird bath or whatever for your wild things, it's wonderful. Or I like to put out apples for the mockingbirds and suet and stuff like that for we've got some flickers that come in. Nice big bird, beautifully colored. And my hawks haven't come back, so I hope they went to your place, Nancy. They're developing the property down at the end here, so I haven't seen them at all. And it's just sad. They brought their baby last year and taught it to fly right over my house. That was kind of interesting. Yes, that was great fun. Well, anyway, I hope this will kind of spur your imagination, and I hope it was helpful just to reiterate what we all know, that animals are part of the life here on this planet, and they deserve our respect and compassion as much as humans. You were talking about Linda leaving Roger alone at night, and you know what struck me? Since I've been doing hospice work for about a year and a half now, we've only just stopped leaving humans who are dying alone at night in the last few years. You know, it's only in the last, since Kubler-Ross started doing her work, in the last 10, 15, well, maybe 20, but I doubt it. Yes.
At the convalescent hospital.
Yes.
She died at 3:30 in the morning.
Which is usually when people go. It's usually early morning. My patient died at 2.
Totally amazed that I was still there.
Yes.
I think that's very
unusual. It's still considered unusual, but it's getting less so, especially with the work of hospice, like Nancy Hines Hospice or St. Agnes, informing people of what a sacred time that is for animals as well as people. That's right. It is, yeah. Does anybody have anything they want to share, or a favorite animal cookie?
I have several experiences this way, and something that you didn't speak on tonight, and that's the way animals communicate with the spirit realm. Because, like, now.
Yes, very true.
When I had Ruth living in my house, most of you don't know, Ruth is a good one. She my daughter every and I almost laughed, but I knew I didn't dare because she was really interacting with someone.
Mm-hmm.
And then she goes like this, and she turns. And
yeah.
I could tell she was really trying to look at what was going on.
Trying to figure it out. Yeah. Thanks for mentioning that, Cookie. That's really true. Dogs and cats, especially. Monty used to just kind of look all around, you know, and see what was going on. Yeah.
One was like a construction worker that used to walk across the roof, and you could hear definite footsteps. You know, it wasn't a cat hopping around on the roof, it was somebody walking on the roof. And you'd start to hear the footsteps, and the dog's head would go up, and he would just follow the noise all the way in until you didn't hear it more. Then I knew I wasn't imagining.
Yeah, there you go. Confirmation. Yeah, thanks for bringing that up. That's really, really true. And cats especially are really sensitive to whatever's in the room. I've seen her just jump up for no reason and, you know, look all around. It's like some little pixie came over and went, let me get that tail, or something like that. You know, Brandy, I remember having that happen as well. So, yeah, interesting.
I have a question.
Sure.
Oh,
Miles, yes. Amazing Miles.
My cat, Miles. Miles needs an exorcist.
That kind of says it all.
Aggressive, obnoxious. You go to pet him, but you try to pet his back. You know, you try to sneak affection on him. And he's like, why do you have that miserable cat? You know, so Lillian came over.
He was, yeah.
He sits at the end of the bed and kind of stares you with his eyes. Don't come in this room. Lillian couldn't resist it, so. And that's not what you came over for, but it's like a side bed.
I couldn't resist it, though.
Amy and I were so
interesting.
Because we were explaining his personality to Lillian, and she walked over, and she said, I'm sending him some love. And Miles acted like he's.
It's really true. It was funny. I remember asking if I could come in, too, if I would come back in a little while or something, if it would be all right if I came in, that I wouldn't come in unless he said it was all right. And I got this urging to go back to the room when everybody else was kind of out at the front of the house, and there he was on the bed, and I asked permission, and he said yes. So I very slowly entered. He just observed me, let me sit on the bed. And the next thing I knew, we were cuddled up together. It was just wonderful. It was just wonderful.
The cat was all over.
Oh, it was great.
And I thought, she fixed him. He's okay now. And the next day, he's biting us all.
Yeah. It probably would have taken a few treatments or some real work with him so I could have understood. Well, I knew he was upset about that dog that surprised him. Her little girl, Rosanna, what were the dogs next door?
Two bulldogs.
And Miles just didn't know, you know, and they were right there. And I think he was very concerned for Rosanna. And
next to that redwood fence, there's a nice size knothole. And read these two huge dogs books.
And they'd sit there and listen.
And they would. They would never bark or growl at her. And she could see one eye through one hole over here and one eye right in front of her. And their people work all day.
Wonderful story.
And Miles hated that.
Yeah. That was his girl. Literally.
And then the dogs are really barking and going crazy. So when he fell this one time, I took my ankle and I, like, body moved and body dragged him with the hook of my foot. And he jumped up and hit my thigh twice and I needed to lift his
off. Right through her jeans. It was unreal.
I
saw it. It was just unreal. She still had the bruises and stuff on her legs.
Oh, no. You know, we tried a few more months, and I gave Healing Foundation a hard spot and talked to them, and they said that they would try to place him with somebody who was real experienced with cats, who had lived with no dogs. So they thought that
so that he would get all the attention. It was an interesting situation.
Oh, you were amazing.
But we just connected. I don't know. I just loved him. I think I've known him. It's a cat person that I've known before, and I just remembered him, I think. And he finally remembered me, too.
He used to look at me like he was being held against his will. Like, just animosity. And my question about
him. Oh, yeah. What does crate training mean? I don't even know what that is.
A crate, a box, and bring her out.
That's my question. Why?
To
introduce her slowly.
It has to do with housebreaking.
What kind of dog?
She's a small
sheep. I don't think so. I would never do that.
So I was thinking of talking to her about housebreaking.
Absolutely, and you show her where, and you praise her when she does it. And if she makes a mistake, help her clean up and never hit. I would never do that. And or yell. It confuses them, you know. They just don't, and they get terrified. And, yeah, just be firm. And right. That's a smart dog. It's too rigid. I remember doing that, yeah. Oh. You might try the communication.
Outdoors, I kind of let her pick and
choose.
Oh. This reminds me of another animal story that I heard, a similar thing of a dog and introducing this animal, young animal, into a cat family. And the woman couldn't understand why, you know, the dog would see the cat in the litter box and the dog would walk in the center of her living room and poop, you know, and she just couldn't get it across. And she said, I can't do these horrible things they say to do, which I totally don't agree with anyway, like rubbing the nose in it or horrible, horrible stuff. And the animal communicator that this person worked with said, well, let me talk to your animal and I'll see what I can find out. And what she found out was she saw the woman cleaning the cat box, and she interpreted that as playing. The woman liked those cat poops. The woman played in the cat box and took those cat poops, so it wanted to give her a gift of some of his poops. No, and he just didn't understand why he got spanked and stuck outside, and she didn't like what he did. So there just was a little loss of communication there, which they restructured, and the animal immediately got it, and there were no more accidents. I mean, it was a matter of days. It was very quick. The woman was astounded, you know. So you might have to think about that.
Yeah. You know, what children and young people do to get a rise out of somebody, children would stand in the litter.
Yes.
And say, come on, and she'll jump out. Like imitative behavior.
Yes. But yeah.
I think she tried to go in there to play.
Put her
maybe. Everywhere.
It was one spot for a whole week. It never got hit. You know, so it's like I would put it where she's hitting,
and then
she would move.
Perfect operation.
Yeah.
Well, you needed newspaper every day.
Yeah. No, there's no for the
whole week. Oh gosh.
She's so sweet. I just want to. If I could just talk to her, you know.
Yeah. Well, I would definitely try it. Right, put her to the spot.
And that's take the journey, put it on to the newspaper, and just put it there for a second.
Yeah.
You don't make a big deal out of it. Just tell her this is the place to do it for now. If you can hold it, we'll go outside.
Okay. Seriously, my 4-year-old, she thinks dogs are gross.
I bet she does. Rosanna would be great with this. They're like a walking fur ball. They're so gorgeous. They are.
We've had cats for 21 years.
Oh, time for a change. I know we're past time here. I want to close, and then we can stay and visit if you want, whatever. But this is from Flower Newhouse's book, and it's just called Requiem, and I just thought it was a really sweet poem. Where are you, little friend? Where is all that perpetual motion, all that joy and infinite devotion, that skill that could catch any ball in flight, the swiftness of running for sheer delight, your wild excitement each time we came home? Though we were only an hour gone, you licked our face and we didn't squirm. Such love could carry no harmful germ. We thank you for all the joy you brought us, for the boundless love you gave and taught us. The angels now tend you with loving care, and we know that like here, you'll be happy there. And though as our pet you might return, if you're up there when it's time for our turn, we know for sure that you couldn't wait. You'd squeeze under or jump over the gate and fly into our arms. And your bark of exuberant love tells the gatekeeper that we are welcome above. And should we still be tainted by some old sin, you'd never stop barking till he lets us in. Isn't that great? I just love it. Hildegard Jackson wrote that, whoever Hildegard was. Anyway, thank you so much.
This is great to talk about.